I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love.
We're not going anywhere. We're right here.
With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keurig. Presented by G2G Bars. On 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
All right, everybody. Welcome on in. It is Unrivaled. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keurig. Scott Mitchell. And as we kick things off here, we remind you that our show is always brought to you by G2G Bars, refrigerated section of your Associated Foods, Holiday Oil, Maverick, the protein bar that doesn't quit. Tastes amazing, too.
So it's freaking awesome.
There you go. Joining us on the program, as he is wont to do from time to time, we love having the voice of the Utah Jazz on with us, David Locke, on courtesy of the Murdoch Auto Group. What's going on, Locke?
It's good. Actually, I'm in Newark, New Jersey, or Jersey City right now. I just finished up 2 days of NBA broadcast meetings. Commissioner Silver presented to us. Monty McCutcheon, the great NBA official, talked to us about a bunch of the new rules and new points of emphasis, met with all the radio announcers. So firing up for a season. It all starts on Monday. Can you believe it?
I know.
Season is here.
It's wild.
It's insane.
What'd you learn at that then? I want to know what they talked to you guys about. I like that stuff. So what are the points of emphasis? What do you do at a broadcast meeting?
So the Monty McCutcheon session is always the most interesting one because Monty's truly one of the great presenters I've ever seen. I was kind of watching him just blowing away. The most interesting, the new take foul rule on trying to prevent the fast break stop take foul euro is into the game now, and so they showed us a bunch of video. If you make a play at the ball and you're trying to get a steal and it happens to have the same impact, that's not going to be a take foul. It's going to be a take foul, and that is going to be one free throw and the ball if you're really not making an action at the ball, mm-hmm. just kind of grabbing a player in a fast break. But they showed us a video of like where Marcus Smart tried to kind of cut off LaMelo Ball with a steal. That's just a basketball player.
Right.
There's another one where I think it was Jason Tatum tried to intercept an outlet pass to Steph Curry in the NBA Finals, and he hits Curry's arm as he's trying to break up the pass, and certainly the impact is that had he not done that, Curry catches the ball, turns the other way, probably has a layup. But that's a basketball play. They showed a video of Donovan Mitchell just being too, not getting back defensively, just grabbing a guy. Well, that's a foul. But they did this in the G League for a year, but the difference is in the G League, they had it as only on ball. So they showed a video of Boban like falling to the ground and grabbing someone to stop them from running. Okay, that's a take foul. And so they talked about those. That's a big one. A lot of talk about benches. Benches are supposed to sit now. They're not allowed to have prolonged standing on the bench
right.
this year.
The hanging out in the corner and just kind of being the rabble rousers in the corner.
What is the purpose for that? Why have players?
Well, I think the purpose is threefold. One is the benches are pretty tight to the floor, and so guys, are really at risk of getting hurt with sprained ankles if everyone's standing up around them and there's not enough room. Two is I think it was creating, you know, plays where there's a play they showed us where, like, Kyle Lowry kind of head bobs at a player, you know, dodges, you know, is altering the shot from the bench.
Right.
And then the third is, frankly, if you paid the amount of money it costs to sit in the second row,
right,
and you're looking at the back of Boban's head all night, you're not that pleased.
Well, Taco Fall was sitting. I remember him at a Celtics game.
He was like fourth row.
He was actually
row.
Sitting down. And
it was still bad. Yeah.
Folks were upset
yeah.
about that.
So I think that. So those were probably, huh. you know, traveling is still a point of emphasis. Freedom of movement is still going to be a point of emphasis. And 4 points of emphasis. I did not write them all down.
Oh, boy, you
they're
take
pretty much
talk.
The same as what they have been for a while.
So Danny Ainge recently talked about kind of the direction the Jazz are headed with a lot of the moves they've made this offseason. Do you like that? That maybe the transparency, is it partly to kind of sell the fans on we've got a plan here, you know, have some patience with us? How do you feel about the recent conversations with Danny Ainge and explaining the strategy of the Jazz in these offseason moves?
You know, I thought he was obviously very frank. I mean, his comment that got all the publicity was a team that didn't believe, right?
Right.
And I thought his interview with Craig Bowler Jack was super, where he said, hey, we might not win as many games right away, but we're going to play with a force and a tenacity and an energy that I think the fans will really like. Justin Zanuck also did a sit-down interview with J.P. Chunga. It's also available at UtahJazz.com. It had some similar pieces of information to it that I think were important. So, you know, it's been really nice, frankly, to have all of these conversations out there and having the front office address what's going on. I think it gave the Jazz, I felt as though, just my vibe, I'd be curious what you guys feel, is that it gave Jazz fans at least some comfort and direction, you know, of where they are. Now, what I think is super interesting as we sit here right now is, you know, Will Hardy's getting ready to go.
Yeah.
Will Hardy's going to be coaching. Like, he's not. He's coaching as hard as he would have coached no matter what his roster is, and he's going to get out there and, you know, win basketball games, and he's not. Like, we're not going to have Will Hardy talking about draft picks in press conferences. We're going to have Will Hardy talking about execution and effort and defense and guarding the ball, and, you know, I think that's one of the huge emphasis we're going to see from Will Hardy is, like, guard the ball. Like, stop with the scheme, stop with the cuteness, guard the ball.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting. The other one is that as our roster sits today, you know, I think not. It's pretty good. You know, I think that roster can win a lot of basketball games.
Yeah, and you know they keep adding a couple names here and there, and it's being reported that Cody Zeller and Micah Potter are also a couple names that are thrown out there that could be added to the Jazz as well on a couple of 10-day contracts. And give us an idea of the timeline of what training camp versus like the regular season and paring down the roster to that 15-man roster on top of the fact that you've got a couple names on there that teams are going to be interested in still even before the year.
Let me do a stupid semantical correction to what you just said only because if Justin Zanuck's listening right now, and which he probably listens to your show all the time.
Sure.
And I didn't correct you. Next time I saw Justin, he'd be like, "Wow, come on, dude." So just in honor of Justin, 10-day contracts are only available after a certain date, usually about midway through the season. So what Micah has signed, I believe, according to reports, is going to be a two-way deal.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
and Johnny Juzang will be on a two-way deal. Those are players that have I think the limit will come back this year. Last year, the limit was lifted because of COVID. A certain amount of days they can spend with the big club in that sense, and the rest of it they're spending in the G League. And then Cody Zeller, I don't know the details on that contract, but I think it sounds like it's a make-good contract for the training camp. So he comes to camp. If he makes the team, then the contract's good.
Right.
Cody Zeller's a nice player. Like, Cody Zeller actually is a player who, for a bunch of years in his career, had one of like the best kind of plus minuses in the NBA, where when he was on the floor, his teams played really well. When he was off the floor, they didn't. And it was, you know, he's a really good pick setter. He's a really good rebounder. He's a really good positional defender. You know, frankly, I hadn't thought about this before, and this might underwhelm some people. And maybe you guys can, I don't know if you have access to anything right now. I can look it up while we're talking.
No,
also.
I can do it. Yeah.
You know, I would guess, like, I know probably a bunch of listeners would listen to this and be like, really? But, like, I actually think like Cody Zeller is an interesting, comp for Walker Kessler.
All right, now we're looking. Which numbers do you want to look at then? In terms of just the points?
Cody Zeller, I'm guessing he's played, probably 500 games in the NBA. I'm going to guess he's averaged, I'm doing this totally off the top of my head, 24, 25 minutes a night in his career.
That's pretty good. It's 22 and a half. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Like, that's a really good career. And if I remember, wasn't Cody Zeller like the sixth pick of a draft?
Yeah, he was definitely a lottery guy. Fourth pick.
I mean, that was probably
overall
a mistake. Okay, so that was a mistake. But, like, when we're trying to figure out, like, Walker Kessler, 22nd pick in the draft, like, what's he going to be? Like, to me, and I maybe set my expectations low, but, like, if Walker Kessler can prove to be a viably good drop big for 22 to 20, and I think that's a success. That's a really big success. I'm not sure that drop bigs, unless they're world class, are going to, and what I mean by drop big, for to make some sense out of this, is players who are in the pick and roll and they drop as the defensive big, just kind of guarding the rim, and they drop with the play. You can, on a pick and roll, you can hedge, which means you come out and bother the ball. You can double the ball. You can switch. Drop is what Rudy did most of the time, where he drops back and he's playing kind of parallel to the rolling big, guarding both the rolling big and the ball handler kind of at the same time. And I think there's some element where the game's spreading out, and that, unless you're Rudy, I'm not sure that you can play drop big more than 24 to 30 minutes a night right now. But I think you have to have a good drop big in your rotation for 24, 30 minutes a night, because the teams that win in the regular season are the teams that deny the rim. That's a fact.
Yeah.
And so if Walker Kessler can do that, that's a great pickup. Cody Zeller's the kind of guy that's done that in his career.
So to get back to your, you know, asking Alex and I what we thought of Danny Ainge and the transparency and the strategy of the Jazz, and then having this discussion about specific players and do they have the skill set and how do they fit into all of this? I know for me, if I'm just speaking as a Jazz fan, I'm just sitting here just saying, okay, you know, the Jazz, I mean, we had a guy on our show yesterday whose in-laws said they are following Donovan Mitchell. Like, they're buying Cleveland Cavaliers. They're no longer Jazz fans. That's it. They're really disappointed in these moves. But for me, I look at someone like Danny Ainge and I go, okay, this guy's done this multiple times. He's been in basketball, you know, as a player, as in management, on all these different positions, and he's had tremendous success. And so when I hear that there is an actual plan, to me as a fan, I get real excited about that. I can weather these growing pains and I can weather a new coach and watching this coach develop and see what he does and see how all these new roster additions and all these players. And to me, I just look at this as a big puzzle, and which pieces fit and which pieces don't, and where's the team deficient. And so I guess I'm on board with, hey, I want to be part of building a championship team and see what that is, because I don't feel like the Jazz are just groping in the dark and they're just, you know, reactionarily doing things. I think there's a real specific purpose to it. I think there's a specific type of player that they're looking for, and it'll be fun to see all of these names. We don't really know a lot of. We don't know how they look like as Jazz players, but we know, you know, that the brain trust of the Utah Jazz likes what something in their game that they think can fit and work for the Utah Jazz. So I'm excited to see how that all plays out.
Yeah, I think, you know, depending where we are in this process, like, it's hard because we're not there right now. Like, the team we have right now, if we start the year with, you know, Mike Conley was really good last year until Jalen Brunson got into him a little bit. But Mike Conley had a heck of a year last year. I think people have really forgotten how good Mike Conley was and how much of a leader he was at times last season. You know, Colin Sexton's pretty good. Like, that'd be a small backcourt. We'd have to figure that out. But Colin Sexton's, like, if we suddenly came out of the season and opened with, like, Mike Conley, Colin Sexton, Bojan Bogdanovic, Malik Beasley, and any of our centers, like, I actually think we'd really be able to score it. Like, and, you know, even switch that around a little bit without, you know, and then off the bench you have a unit that's either Sexton or Conley on the floor, right? Because you always have a point guard on the floor. You're playing JC a little bit. You're playing Talen Horton-Tucker a little bit. You're playing Agbaji a little bit. Mm-hmm. You're playing Jared Vanderbilt in a small, fast, five-man-out switching lineup. And your other – like, that's – like, those – like, that team's fine. Like, it's not going to, like, win a championship. I think it probably makes a play-in game. And that's fine. But I don't know if that's – it's still not entirely clear where we're heading. So
sure.
It's weird because our instinct as a fan base, I think, is to be in a nine-month mindset, right? Like – what are we going to be like from October to April, right? There's not like this like 8 month, 7 month, 6 month, whatever it is, window. I think you actually have to start moving your mindset to a 48-month mindset, right? So you're thinking about as we're going to make some moves, right? And eventually, you know, probably Mike, Boyan, Jordan, some of these guys maybe get moved to other spots or become desirable to other teams in a manner that leaves us no choice. So how is Agbaji developing? How is Kessler developing? Is Balmero finding, you know, he's a really nice player, just hasn't shot well. Well, can he figure out how to shoot?
Right.
Vanderbilt's a super interesting, like, how does he, what's his lane? And trying to find these pieces along the way to, and to build this thing up. And you change your mindset into a longer form. That's hard as a fan because, frankly, we want the immediate gratification. We're watching games for the final score. But I think that's a little bit of where we're heading.
So you bring up a good point because you talk about these guys getting a chance to develop. And if you have, you know, you have Boyan and you have Connolly and, you know, maybe JC that are taking up minutes, valuable development minutes, are you better off moving those guys now or down the road so these guys can get those that development time that probably is extremely precious, I would think.
So I go two ways on this one. I don't have a really definite good answer for you. One is, sure, right? Like, if Balmero's sitting on the bench and not playing, well, that hurts his development. If Fonsecchio's not getting to play, that's not why he came over, right? So I think there's a yes. The other side of the story that I think is important, and I use this as my over-dipped Oreo cookie analogy, And I'll give this to you. This is kind of when I believe that developing players in the NBA is like Oreo cookies. You ready?
Giannis is ready. I know that.
Giannis is a big Oreo fan. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Let's do
it. So I think I've given this to you guys before, but like if people haven't heard it, like if they're sitting on the bench, then and they're not Balmero and Fonsecchio aren't playing, then they're just an Oreo cookie. Like, you got a cup of milk right there. You can make them, like, really, really good and let them, like, soak it in the milk a little bit. But if you don't have time for them, then they just are an Oreo cookie. The flip side is if you dip an Oreo cookie in the milk and you leave it too long,
falls off
in
your fingers.
It crumbles, falls apart, and then all you have is a bunch of crud at the bottom of a cup of chocolatey milk that's not very good.
Yeah.
And so I do think you have to be a little right. Exactly. Now you got your fingers in there, you're digging in, you're dripping, you're wiping on your pants. Your wife's pissed because you got stains on your pants. She tells you you're slut. Like it's bad. It's just bad at that point. So I think when you talk about these guys, like I think you don't want them just being an Oreo cookie. You want them to be more than an Oreo cookie. But you need to dip it correctly. And under dipping at times is fine because over dipping is catastrophic. And so it's a little bit of a fine line.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that as the training camp kind of gets started up here next week, and which is wild to think that we're already there. And it just seemed like such a short off season because of how many things were going on. And I don't know, maybe did it feel like that for you? Because it felt like there was, I mean, I know you took some vacation, but at the same time, you probably had to force yourself because this was one of the shortest off seasons I felt like that we've had in a long, long time as Jazz observers.
I felt like it was news filled and there wasn't a lot of vapid area in this off season, but I'm ready. Like,
yeah.
I call basketball games for a living. I like to perform. We can decide whether somebody else can decide whether that just means I'm an egomaniac or whatever you want to call me, but that's what I do, right? Like, that's my Jones. I wake up differently when I get to call on the first day of the year, when I get to call a game and that's the day, and I'll come to that arena and I'll, like, you know, a few years ago, I said to my wife, like, I felt alive again. Like, that's who I am. It's been a really long time since I've gotten to do that. So, I feel off seasons are always long. I'm ready for the 162-game NBA schedule, not the 82-game.
So what is there? What are some of the storylines then with this completely overhauled team? You know, what are some of the really good storylines to look forward to, maybe early on in the season? And you know, what are you looking forward to?
Well, I think this is like what's so interesting is I'm not sure right now, right? Like, so I mean, if it's the Conley, Boyan, Clarkson, Beasley, Vanderbilt, like laden team, that's like one. Those are really different storylines. That's going to be is can they guard the ball and can they play with a renewed energy and can they, you know, and can they score without Donovan and, you know, some things of that nature. I think there's obviously going to be the question about the defensive void that's been filled. Now, if they do make some moves and some of these guys are moved to another spot, then I think you're very much into opportunity development storylines. And then I think the overriding storyline I would just get into all season long is kind of an effort, tenacity, approach to the team. And if they turn out to be a bit shorthanded, there will be nights where that talent void really comes back to bite them and they have a tough night or two. That's just the reality right. of this league yeah. where, you know, you're just on the third game in five nights and the other team's better than you are. And then they hit you hard. You're just like, oh man. But I think when you try to look at the more complete picture, just, you know, what's the effort level and the defensive tenacity and the enjoyment of the game, I think, is what this team needs to, you know, I think fans want to feel that they didn't feel last year more than anything.
David Locke, voice of the Utah Jazz, joining us here on Unrivaled. We appreciate all the time you've taken, even in the offseason here, David, to chat with us. And we're looking forward to an even more exciting and question-filled regular season and training camp and preseason and all that. So thanks for hanging out, man.
Sounds good. I will talk to you soon.
There you go. David Locke, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
We're going to come back. More to go here on the program when we return. We've got our two-minute drill, got our NFL roundup. You don't want to miss any of those things. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Stay with us.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.